And that's where the spirituality comes into place, I think. It's a connectedness to everything that's around us. And just instead of listening to what's going on outside, you're listening to what's going inside.
Oh, well, I love that. I love that. So I it's so funny you say that. I ordered these new bands. They say, listen.
Love it.
And it says the spiritual artist, and it's a band. It's for my next retreat, because I think teaching people to listen to what's going on and in their head, listen to that conversation with whatever you want to call a higher power, a different power, whatever your connection to all that is. And so I read these bands, and I love that you brought that up. But learning to listen to what's being coming through you. Good day, listeners. You are listening to the Spiritual Artist Podcast. This is CJ Miller, your host. I just got back from a wonderful trip in New York. It was crowded. The city is very crowded, but so colorful, so exciting. Went to the Met, had a great time. I'm really thrilled with today's artist. She reached out to me via Instagram after she was starting to read my book. And I'm always thrilled when someone responds to my book and reaches out to me. So I want to share that with you, listeners. If you're someone that has read my book and there's something in there, that a concept that you want to talk about or elaborate on, yeah, private message me on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. You can go to my website, spiritualartisttoday.com. You can send a contact form in and say, hey, I'd love to be on your podcast, and I would love to talk to you about your process. That said, when I looked at the work of Molly Sanger Carpenter, I was thrilled, because it is so dense with discipline. So she does sculpture, she does mosaic, she does painting, and she brings it all together. So let me introduce Molly Sanger Carpenter. She lives and works from her farmhouse studio in Salem, New Jersey. So I was just up there close to her in New York. She's trained in classical sculpture techniques and materials. So she now often incorporates elements of mixed media. That's what's so exciting about this interview, to create her artworks. And we will have them sliding over the screen so you can see them. Her current focus is on creating fine and unusual art icons. We'll have to talk about that. I love the word icons. Combining elements of sculpture, glass, paint, and 24 karat gold. She's been featured in many exhibitions throughout the Mid-Atlantic and beyond over a decorated 40-year career. And she is in many galleries and venues in Delaware, New Jersey, Philadelphia, and New York City. I want to talk about that with her. So good morning, Molly. How are you?
Good morning, Chris. I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited to finally get you on the show. I think you reached out to me a couple months ago.
And I did.
Yeah. So I was just up there in your part of the country. This is the strangest thing. I believe it was warmer in New York than it was in Texas.
Wow.
That's weird.
That's the weather we're having. We just came back from Hawaii and it like rained the entire time. So it was suntan for me.
Oh, it's still beautiful, but yeah, it does rain a lot. Which, were you on the main island or?
We were in the Hilo side, which does rain more than the other side. But then the last day we went to the other side and it rained there. So
that's rough. That's really rough. Well, I'm thrilled that you reached out to me. And like I told you, we had a pre-call, and I love your artwork. So why don't you explain a little bit to our listeners? I don't know how to explain it. You told me there's a certain material you use, and you kind of make a unique frame for each one of your pieces, right?
Yes, I do. I make the frames in clay, which is, I was trained as a sculptor, so that's my primary medium. And I was for years and years having things cast at the foundry, or trying to cast them myself. And I learned a lot working for other artists, the casting process. And finally, when the bronze got so expensive, I just decided, well, what can I do myself? And I walked a lot, and that's where I come up with concepts. Mm. And they just came to me, why don't you incorporate the sculpture as the frame, and then continue and go with the painting, which didn't come naturally to me. and learned this mosaic process, which I had a friend that taught me, and went from there. And here I am.
Well, they're so layered, you know, and they're so, I would describe your work as magical, you know, they really are magical. So what do you mean the drawing didn't come natural to you? Because it looks exquisite.
Well, I tend to think in three dimensions. So learning to translate that into a two-dimensional painting has been a process. But even as a painter, I think as a sculptor, so my paintings tend to have a very three-dimensional quality.
Oh, that's funny. You know, I feel like I'm the other way. I feel like I started learning how to draw, and I find that my drawings are pushing more and more three-dimensional. You know, and I'm getting antsy, like thinking, well, maybe I should do sculpture.
Ooh, I highly recommend it.
Well, you know, I heard about, have you seen some of this, the printing, the 3D printing that's going on?
Oh, it's amazing. It is. I'm tempted to try it. I really am. I saw some in a gallery just last week, and just the minutiae, which tends to be my thing.
Yeah.
It just amazed me. These pieces that I was looking at, they had little articulating joints. They were fish. And so the whole spine was printed so that the fish could move.
And it was a 3D printing that did that?
3D printing, yeah.
That's amazing. So I want to talk about your frames a little bit more there. Do you create a mold? Or are they... Okay, explain that.
Because I work in oil-based modeling clay, and that obviously it's not permanent. So you have to cast it into a more permanent material. So in order to do that, you have to make a mold. I have to make a mold from it. I use latex rubber. I've come to full circle, and I use all natural materials and all that in my studio because my studio is connected to the house. So I build a latex rubber mold, and from that I can get many castings. So I do reuse the molds.
Okay.
The mosaic and the paintings are unique, but the mold, the castings, I cast once a year. So if I make one or two, I use those in the process. So now I'm up to probably 30 molds and counting.
I've got
a piece in the studio right now that's in clay and it's ready to be molded. So that's on my docket for this week.
So what's the most that you've used, like with one mold, what's the most frames you've made?
Probably 10.
10. Yeah, yeah, so they're very unique. They're like, are they numbered?
I used to date and number everything, but then it dates the piece.
Uh-huh.
The clay. Okay. The clay is the only thing. I do put a little stamp of my name and the date on it. So that's all, but, not the paintings and not the finished work.
Well, yeah, it's funny. I always get into this discussion with people because I don't sign my paintings on the front. I sign them in the back. And when people buy them, they're like, "Where's your signature?" And I'm like, "I don't want to ruin the composition with my signature." You
right?
know? I'm presenting you an image of something, mm-hmm. and I want that image to be a certain way, and I don't want to have a scribbly scrobbly in a corner.
I understand. Mine are very tiny usually.
Yeah.
Like I will put on I take out my contacts because I really can't see very well without my contacts, except I can see up close, like really minutia. And so I'll take out my contacts and just tiny little signature in the corner.
Yeah. You know, I'm looking at what's in your room. And it's funny. I was watching a movie last night and they had some grandfather clocks in it, and it's a beautiful clock.
Well, thank you.
And I'm looking at the ornamentation on it. And then I'm looking at your sideboard there and the incredible wooden ornamentation on the top of it. And you can see that you have that kind of what I'd call it's in your creative DNA, right?
Absolutely. It's the things that you live with that kind of come out in the work. There's a piece behind me too.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. And that's so, and you can see that in your work, that kind of inspiration, right?
It definitely comes out. There's no question about it.
Yeah, I just did a retreat about 6 weeks ago, and I try to teach people to be aware of your influences. What are you creatively? What is your creative DNA? And you can certainly see it in your house. Were you always attracted to that kind of ornamentation, the beautiful lush curves and everything?
Oh yeah, absolutely. When I was a kid, we went to the Episcopal Church, and being a daydreamer, I really didn't pay a lot of attention to what was going on except visually inside the church. And it had these soaring arches and angels up in the ceiling. And it was just an amazing place. And the stained glass windows, of course, there was a Tiffany there. And that's how I spent my time. It really influenced me.
It's funny. I'm the same way. I was raised Catholic. And when we were in New York, there was a St. John the Baptist, I think there's a church. And it's just, that's what's so amazing about New York, right? You're walking down a street and there's this beautiful old church with a little sign on it. But more, I will tell people, you can always get in. They'll let you in. You know, you just walk up and they say, come on in.
Yeah.
And I go in, I took pictures of the stained glass. I was looking at the ornamentation of the vaulted ceiling. I want to talk to you about what you just said, because I think that's really interesting. As I get older, I'm starting to realize that my sight is more is a higher sense than my listening. Like I'm like you. I was talking to my husband once, and I listened to a song on the radio. I don't listen to the words. I'll see things. Okay, let me go back and say that. So we went to a musical. We went to see Merrily We Roll Along on Broadway. I look at the stuff. Right. Yeah. I look at the costuming and the colors and the backdrop and the lights and even the stuff in the room itself. And mm-hmm. sometimes I'm not even paying attention to the words.
I'm the same way. I'm that way with television shows, too. I find that I can miss an entire plot of a movie. And it's a real problem, too, when you're talking to people and you're too focused on like their visual features and you don't hear what they're saying.
It's true. Like they'll have if a woman has a beautiful necklace on, I'll be like, oh, look at that necklace. And I forget her name. 5 minutes later, I won't remember her name, but I remember the necklace and the use of colors. And so I think it's interesting that as artists, we all learn, we all should be aware of what senses are our strong points. You know, mm-hmm. That's what I was going to explain. I was with my husband yesterday and he was trying to show me to do something. I said, you can't show, I have to do it. I'm kinesthetic too. So I think I'm kinesthetic, visual, and then audio is like down the line for me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Do you listen to music when you paint?
Yes. I'll listen to music. Yes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll listen to a podcast or someone talking, you know, like a motivational. What it does is it takes me out of my head. It kind of keeps my head busy.
Mm-hmm.
And then my subconscious just goes with the creativity, you know? So
that's the way mine is too. And sometimes I just listen to like AM news radio.
Right. Just something, just right.
In the background.
So you said when you reached out to me, I want to talk a little bit about your work. So you create the frames and then you do insets with mosaic and painting. And I'm going to ask, as you describe this, I'm going to slide some of those over in the final interview, but, what's your inspiration? How do you come up with these ideas of what you want to present?
Well, it's funny because if I force an idea and if I say, well, I need to paint a penguin, which is what's going through my head right now, usually it turns into something else. So the ideas actually kind of flow when I'm working on the piece. I start with a sketch right on the actual frame. Mm-hmm. And it normally, like I said, what I picture in my brain comes out as something completely different. And it just evolves.
So it's not like you don't force it down one avenue. You kind of just feel it or listen for it.
And see it.
Uh-huh.
I'll stand back and I'll look at the frame and it sort of grows there.
Yeah.
For lack of a better term. And I can see that in your work as well. It's your hands kind of do the thinking for you, or at least mine do.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I've had a reminder lately, a friend of mine just this morning said, trust the process. You just have to believe in the magic and go with it. And that's what I do. And when the work really comes easily and flows, those are the best pieces.
I have the hardest time trying to redo something, right? Like if you did something and it was successful, and then when I try to go down that same path, mm-hmm. it doesn't come easy. I agree with you. It's like that flow.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, very much. And that's where the spirituality comes into place, I think. It's a connectedness to everything that's around us. And just instead of listening to what's going on outside, you're listening to what's going inside.
Oh, well, I love that. I love that. So I it's so funny you say that. I ordered these new bands. They say, listen.
Love it.
And it says the spiritual artist, and it's a band. It's for my next retreat because I think teaching people to listen to what's going on and in their head, listen to that conversation with whatever you want to call a higher power, a different power, whatever your connection to all that is. And so I read these bands and I love that you brought that up. But learning to listen to what's being coming through you. Right.
Yes.
So yeah. What I think is so exciting with your work is you might start with the same frame, but you're getting different, you go in different directions. Like if you do it.
Yeah. The frames really, they don't constrict what goes inside. There's so many different interpretations. It's like languages. I don't know what I'm trying to say here.
No, that means you're getting something good. You know, that's like, so they don't, I love that. They don't constrict you. So it's sort of like a jumping off point, but you go in it, you can swim in a different direction each time.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Just wherever the tide takes you. Mm-hmm.
Wow. And so you've learned to just be in that, I call it being present, right? And just letting it take you.
Yes. Yes. Except when there's like a commission involved and then you have a little less freedom. But I've found that working with people with commissions is great. I can kind of tap into what it is that they want and occasionally even make something that they didn't know that was going to be in the piece. And when they see it, they said, how did you know to put that in the piece? But when I work on big commissions with committees, it's kind of a different thing. Oh,
committees. Yeah. Hey, right? The committees.
Yes.
Are just, it's funny, though. I think you're right. When I've done commissions, too, I don't know about you, but I let myself feel them. Like I spend time with them. But then I don't tell them what I'm thinking because sometimes they don't even know. I know this sounds weird, but sometimes they don't even know who they are, right?
Right.
And so they just have to see it. So it's like, I'll show you and then see how you respond to it, you know?
Yes. And only occasionally do you get the person that says, no, sorry. I've had that happen maybe 3 times. And it's very hurtful, but you know, you get over it.
I know. I try to leave it open to if they don't like it, then it's something I could sell elsewhere or get or use elsewhere. So how did you learn this process? You know, I know you reached out about my book and you said you've learned to listen. Is this something that you grew into with experience of listening?
Yes. And I think our Quakerism has something to do with it. Because as Quakers, you are supposed to listen to that, the voice within, the inner light, they call it. And we sit in meeting and everybody sits quietly in meeting and waits for their message or waits to hear their message. And I draw. I do. I bring a drawing pad. And that's the lesson. That's what I'm listening for, is what comes through in the drawing. And I think because I practice that, I think I can take it into the studio as well.
I didn't know that. So you identify as a Quaker?
Yes.
Wow, I love that. I didn't know that that was some principle that they teach, you know?
Yes, very much so. The inner light, the God within, many words for it. But that's how they get their messages. They listen for it. And then you find that of God in the other person too. And the theory is, or the belief is, that there is that of God in everyone, no matter who.
No matter who.
Yeah.
I love both of those. Are key points. I agree. I'm total alignment with what you're saying. And unfortunately, a lot of religions don't. Like Catholicism didn't teach me to look within. Now, there might be some listeners that say, yeah, but it didn't. It taught me to look out and make sure that I please everybody outside. Mm-hmm. But so I love that about this Quaker faith, that they teach you that. And then I love, I call it seeing God in everyone.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I want to tell, oh, that's so funny. Give me goosebumps now. Okay. So I want to tell you what I did at the airport. I was at JFK and we were delayed 2 hours, and it was so crazy. And I'm starting to realize that I like quiet. You know, I'm much more of a Santa Fe person than a New York person, because I like my space and I like quiet. So it was crazy, you know, babies screaming, kids yelling, people running, you know, the speaker, right? Like the loudspeaker. It was so nuts. And we had to wait 2 extra hours, and we got there. I'm always prompt. So 3 hours of waiting at an airport on the day after Christmas. So it was loud. Well, finally, I put my headphones on to block out some of the sound. But you know what I did? I sat there on the runway. This is one of those places where people get on a tram. And mm-hmm. then, you know, there's those trams to help you walk. And then you walk a few steps and then you get on another one. And I stood there. And I just focused on every single person passing, and I projected love to them. It was such an experience. I'm everyone, not just the pretty ones, or not just the rich ones, or not just the every single person that walked past, and baby and child, and you know, from the workers, right? The people in the airport, the people that were running the trams. I just sat there, and every time I looked at them and sent them love, sent them love. Sent them love. I did that for like an hour and a half. And
how did they respond?
I don't know. You know, I just wanted to send them peace and love and connectivity. And it did feel like, it's funny, I don't know how they responded, but I know that I calmed down.
Yes.
You know, like instead, and suddenly I was like, I was at peace. And instead of being all frazzled and get me out of here, I was just standing there, and they would look at me. You know, there was this eye catch. And if someone was frowning or you could see that they were really tense, I sent them like even more. You know, so I think that's a neat thing that you're saying that you're taught.
Yeah.
And, you know?
Yeah, it's it's funny because I did the same thing last week or 2 days ago when I was in the Colorado airport having a 4-hour layover. And I found myself trying to make eye contact with people. You had written in your book about during COVID, you went to the grocery store with your son and people were terrified, and you were trying to make eye contact with the people. And you, on the way out of the grocery store, you saw a woman and you made eye contact and you found that spiritual being.
Hey.
And I was trying to do that. And I found it in one guy who worked at Starbucks. And he asked me about my flight, and we smiled, we laughed, we enjoyed each other's company, but Yeah, it's hard. It was hard finding someone to do that because most of the people were looking down. But
they're looking at their phones, right? They're looking at their phones, or I know they're just not, they're not present, right?
Oh. No, that's true. And I actually ran into a guy that was looking at his phone. There were so many people and it was so crowded there.
It is. Can you imagine though, if everybody made that a practice? I would share that with my listeners. Try this next time. You know, what Molly and I did here. Next time you're in a crowded place, just try to sit down, find a bench, stand, lean against the wall, and just project love. You know, some people aren't comfortable with the word God. So if you don't want to see God in everybody, just see the love in them.
And the light.
Yeah. Right. In all the diversity of them. The incredible diversity in New York, you know, just anything you can think of, every religion, sexual orientation, skin color, just all milling about, children, ages, some ages, right? So how did you feel when you did it? When you were in Colorado?
I feel that it gives back. It's sort of the old adage of the giver is the one that receives the benefit of the giving. It made me happy, and that's what it's all about. I think finding happiness, finding peace, finding again that of God within.
I think it's funny. I was telling you, I was listening to an Oprah Winfrey podcast earlier on the same trip, mm-hmm. and the she was interviewing a guy that wrote a book. I can't remember the name of the book, but he was talking about how we've lost our sense. The reason so many Americans are unhappy is how we've lost our sense of community. And that's exactly what you're saying. So many people are looking at their phones and they're all in their own little private worlds. And so by sitting there, like for you and I, to stand there and just reach out and send love and community, it changes how you feel. And we can't ignore that we're that we're connected.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yep. And he was saying that's what's happened since social media, he said, I love how he described it. He said, social media is like the fast food of your spiritual life. You get a little hit, right? You'll see a picture of something. You'll see a warm, even if you see a cute picture of a dog, but you're not hugging the dog. You know, it's a distant, it's like when you eat a Big Mac, you get that in there, but it's not giving you the nutrition you need. And so same thing, when you look at social media, you're getting that, you feel like you're taking care of your sense of community, but you're not getting the real connection. And so when that guy looked back at you and you smiled, that's what you can't get in social media.
No, you really can't. There are so many benefits to it. There have been sales that I've made through it. There have been ways to see artworks that I wouldn't otherwise be able to see. But you need that one-on-one with people. You really do. And I think the less that we do the one-on-one, the more easy it is to sort of just be in our own little worlds and retreat. And as an artist, that's easy for me because I'm not an extrovert.
You're like me, you like quiet, right? I mean,
exactly.
It's like spend my time in my studio, I'll be quiet, right? And I'm the same way, but making yourself reach out and touch is an amazing experience, huh?
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And even in the studio, it's funny because my husband, he'll walk into the studio when I'm working. And right now I have an exercise bike in there. Sometimes he'll go, I'm just going to get on the bike. I'm going to be really quiet. I won't say anything. But I know he's back there. I can feel him. No, poor thing. I've been known to throw him out.
Ah,
yeah.
You know, I know. I mean, it would be, it's a different experience. And I don't know, I guess part of me says, well, maybe, you know, see what comes out of your work when he's standing there. I don't know, you know, right? It'd be interesting, right? I'm the same way. I'm like, I'm working, like my son will come in and I'll be in, you know, I call it flow when I'm in flow, right? And he'll come in and start talking. I'm like, I'm in flow, son.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me get through that.
I would tell my husband, you're scaring the muse.
Oh, that's funny. You know, you mentioned that when we talked earlier, you talk about the muse and you mentioned having read Big Magic, I think by is Elizabeth Gilbert. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I'm actually, that's one of the books I took on the plane that I couldn't read.
Well, she talks about the muse in there, you know, and how we all, and I call it, I think of the muse as this divine intelligence. I call it creative intelligence that we plug into. And I feel like if you don't, and she says this in the book, right? If you, I don't know if you got this far yet, but she says, if you don't grab that idea,
somebody else will get it.
It goes on to the, it goes on to the next person.
Yeah. And I wonder about that, you know, with the things that I have left behind. Hopefully someone has picked them up, because there's not enough time for all the ideas, let's face it. And an original idea, when it comes to you, you got to roll with it.
I love that. The things I left behind. That needs to be the title of your next work. I love it. You know, it's a great title, isn't it? It's the ideas that come through. And, you know, I think you're right. I don't know if you feel the same way, but as you practice this skill, mm-hmm. there's endless amounts of creative inspiration, right?
Oh, there really are. And you pick them up just everywhere you go. A lot of artists feel bad about the time they don't spend in the studio making things. But I think that you're constantly gathering little bits of information, no matter what you're doing. If you're walking the dog or going to the grocery store or going to church, the ideas they're being planted like little seeds in your head, and they will come out.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, it gets back to one of the things I had a talk with a friend yesterday, and she's making some major changes in her life. Mm-hmm. And she says, and she wasn't listening. I actually gave her one of my wristbands, and she said, I realized I wasn't listening, that Spirit was telling me that this, I needed to change this job. And I was resolute. She was like forcing, trying to make it work. And the money wasn't coming. And challenge, you know, debt challenges were building up because she was insistent on trying to control the end result. And I think we have to let go, right? When that inspiration comes, you can't control where it ends. You have to just listen for it.
Mm-hmm. But the ego always steps in and tries to, doesn't it?
It does. The ego will sit there and say stuff like, oh, that color is not popular, or someone will laugh at me. You know, that's a big one, right? For me, that's a big one. Like, oh, that looks silly. People will think I'm not a serious artist if I, you know?
So, but I do find that laughter is one of the emotions that people really react to. Laughter and joy in painting. I'm never afraid to be too silly.
Yeah. So so do you get, when you listen and you're working on, so you have a frame and you're listening, you have the most, how do you hear it? Do you see images, or do you feel it in your body? Like what next to do?
I actually see what has to be there. And so usually it starts with a shape. Like if I'm looking at the frame and I say, well, that needs something circular. So I'll draw the circle on there and step back and, well, maybe a face over there. Oh, look, it's a mermaid.
And it just kind of falls into a mermaid.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And usually, you know, fortunately with paint, it's very forgiving. So if you make the arm a little too short or something, there's ways to correct things. And that's the kind of place where my intellect takes over. The training kicks in usually.
I think that's a good point that you make. There's a time for flow, and then there's a time for analyzing, you know, where you come in and you say, okay, this color is a little off, or you tweak, right? You clean it up. I call it cleaning it up.
Right? Absolutely. You know? Yeah. And that's, sometimes you can get over involved in that, and you got to know when to step back and say it's finished.
I've done that.
When I was a little girl, my mother would always take my drawings away from me. When at a certain point, she'd say, "You're finished." And I always thought that was the meanest thing in the world, but she probably had an eye for what was going on and wanted me not to overwork it.
Oh, that's lovely. I did advertising for years, and my assistant would always tell me that same thing. She said, "I'm taking this away from you. You're done. It's done." And learning when to stop, you know, learning when to stop. You know what I love about this conversation is I have talked to people that, and I have lent myself to abstracts because I feel like it's open in receiving as I go. But you're showing me that you can do the same thing with imagery and with, you know, with that you can be open, but still take it into a figurative arena. Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
Yeah. That's exciting.
Thank you.
Because when I talk to a lot of figurative artists or illustrators, they're on the other side, right? They try to control the heck out of it. Mm. And you're saying, "Oh no, yeah, I'll start with a curve," and suddenly this looks maybe like a mermaid, right?
Yeah, and there's also I was having a conversation on Facebook of all places just yesterday about sense of place in work and how some artists are connected to where they are. Having been to Hawaii last week, most of the work there has sort of a Hawaiian vibe to it, be it the flowers or the people that are incorporated in the paintings or not so much landscape. I didn't see a whole lot of landscapes, but around here in this area, there's a lot of landscape artists. And I put it out there that, is it necessary for your work to fit the sense of place where you live in order for it to reach the people that you're trying to reach in this area? And the consensus was no, especially with work like yours, abstract work. It can go anywhere. And work like mine, which I still have yet to see, because I think that mine is somewhat connected to where I am. But it's just, that's the nice thing about abstract work too. It can fit in anywhere, any place. And I guess mine does too, according to the people that answered.
I love that question though, how you phrase that. Is it important to have your sense of place? And I love that you brought that up. I'm always reading new material. Right. I love reading new material. And one of the things I learned I would share with my listeners is I don't just listen to artists, but I'll listen to people in theater or music. And sometimes you can take a technique from a different discipline and apply it to art making. So I found this guy named Paul Baker, and he wrote a book for actors. And he trained here in Dallas young students, but he taught them that we do bring our sense of place, especially in our primary years, you know, maybe the first 7 years of your life, that we are affected by where we grow up. Mm-hmm. And you know, you said that. I was in New York, I was on Long Island, and it was so overcast and everything was gray and foggy. It was that beautiful kind of like blue gray, wispy colors, nothing bright with the thick black lines of vertical trees, you know, and I noticed that a lot of the art in my friend's house was gray and smoky and with, you know, there was a lot of monochromatic work. Mm-hmm. And do you know what's funny? Down here in Dallas, I don't see very much. They don't like monochromatic work.
Yeah.
You know, I've done paintings that are monochromatic, and they just kind of walk past them. They want color, right? And so I think it's interesting. Like, I think maybe my monochromatic image would sell better in New York, mm-hmm. or Long Island, or somewhere where they're used to that winter colorscape. If that's, you know,
yeah. And so there's nothing inherently wrong with either one. They're both perfect. It's just taking it to the place where you reach the people.
Yeah. And also recognizing what yours is. So that's what Paul Baker teaches his students. He said he grew up in West Texas and it was all open sky and horizon. Everything was about the horizon. Yeah. And so he sees all of his work in horizon view. Now, see, I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of factories and construction and, you know, industry, right? Steel mills, lots of gears and geometric shapes. And so I wonder how much I've been influenced as an abstract artist because I like that sense of complicated man-made industry, if that makes
sense. I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's something. Yeah.
So tell me about your childhood. You know, you have these beautiful, I call them romantic imagery, like romanticism. I don't know if you feel that way. Whimsical romanticism. I'm going to get...
I like that.
Whimsical romanticism, because you'll have these wonderful, you know, fawn-like creatures or fairies or animals, and then you have these beautiful curves and then these rich colors. You very much love color. Are you living where you grew up? Did you grow up there?
Well, I grew up about 20 minutes away to the west over in Delaware. And, you know, a lot of the art there isn't reflective of those colors. I think that's probably just a personal thing for me. I've always been kind of attracted to jewel tones and jewels in general. And it's just the things that give me joy are the things that the colors that I like to work with. Like, it's your work. You have to put into it
the right
what comes to you and what you love. Yeah.
I wonder where that was influenced. Do you think you just came into this life with that, you know, that DNA for color?
Well, it could be. It could also be going back to the stained glass windows. And then early on, like out of high school, I took a job in a jewelry store and, you know, jewels and baubles and glass, just heavily influenced by glass. Took a glass blowing course at one point. So I know how to flame work the little itty bitty glass things. It's one of my things that I've done. And just any bright sunny day, I mean, that's where I gravitate.
Well, you know, it's funny. I think Delaware has a lot of bright, sunny days. I went to college at University of Delaware. I don't know if I told you that. And
yeah, great. It's a great school.
Oh, it's a wonderful campus. It's a great school. I loved it. It was a wonderful decision to go there. And there's some nice sky there. There's some nice blue sky.
Oh, yeah. And here in southern New Jersey, you talked about the flat plains and the broad skies. It's we get the most tremendous sunsets because we're looking over towards Delaware across the Delaware River. And here we're perfectly flat. And all I have is my neighbor back there and on the farm, wide open spaces. So that's what we have too.
Oh, wow. So I don't know. I think some of these things we are influenced by what's near us, but then you're right. I think sometimes we just have preferences. You know, mm-hmm. There's just certain preferences that we lean toward, and being aware of what your preferences are. You know, I would tell my students to conscious that if you want to challenge yourself. So like if you're doing a technique that gets tiring, mm-hmm. force yourself away from what you're used to. So maybe you like jewel tones and you're doing a subject matter. You're like, I've done this before. Make yourself do dark earthy colors, or make yourself do, you know, a blue palette. Just get away from, you know what I mean? And that will force you.
Exactly. Years ago, my son told me that I need to do an entire show in black and white. Like do my frames in black or do my frames in white and, you know, just do the entire painting in grayscale.
Yeah.
I do it.
It's one of those ideas, right? It might be one of those ideas that gets left behind, or you might do it, right?
Right.
So I want to pick into this. We're running close to the end, and this has been great. I love talking with you. I want to talk about this penguin. So how is a penguin appearing in your mind, and why are you resisting the penguin? That's, you know.
Well, once I start drawing it, we'll see how much resistance there is. But Christmas Day, my granddaughter opened this giant penguin, a stuffed penguin that she got for Christmas. And I guess that's where it sort of started in my head. We went to an aquarium over there. Well, it was more like a SeaWorld.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't have any penguins, but they had a lot of other types of animals like that. And I started thinking about, you know, what's happening to some of the animals and the extinction and all that. How important it is to bring that awareness to people. And I think as artists, we can do that with our work too.
Oh, I do too. I do too. And I think having a purpose to your work is wonderful.
Mm.
You know, it's so funny because you talked about black and white and a penguin and animal, you know, animal rights. And you got a thread there. You know, I could see this thread, right? Maybe that is your black and white series.
Okay. Some zebras too.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I want to ask you one other question now. I love that you were raised in you're a Quaker. Is there any other, how did that affect you as an artist? Are they big believers in art?
Well, no, I think that's where my Episcopalianism comes into play, because in the Quaker meeting, there really is, it's very plain. They're beautiful structures. The meeting that we go to, it's this beautiful brick structure, but there's nothing inside except for the benches and the walls and a sign up front that says God is love. And so I'm a little starved for that visual imagery that I grew up with. And I think that's where it comes out.
Oh, I love it. Because Quaker is minimalist, right? Yeah, they're very minimal.
Very much. Early on, there was no music in the meeting houses and they were very strict, but things have kind of relaxed a little bit, a lot, actually.
Weren't the Quakers, though, please correct me if I'm wrong, because weren't they big believers in freedom for all people? And didn't they participate in the flight of slaves? Didn't they help slaves escape?
Very much, right in this area. We live along the Underground Railroad here. And early on, before the slaves had been freed, they wouldn't wear cotton clothing. They only wore wool because the cotton was part of the slave industry. And they were part of the whole emancipation.
Lovely. You know, this reminds me that there's wonderful practices and truth in every religion. I'm more and more, I'm considering myself interfaith, you know, like I want to listen and pay attention to all the different faiths and be open to the lessons I can learn from them. And I think the lesson of individualism and looking within and the seeing God within everybody else is just, those are just wonderful gifts from that Quaker faith, you know?
It really is. And that's what we have found. My husband's family goes way back in the Quaker faith. And so I started attending with him and it's just a good fit.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I love it. All right. Well, so is there anything that you'd like to share with our listeners, something that you're coming up? Oh, I didn't even ask you. And I noticed this, there's so much to talk about, but I noticed that you're doing your work and you're participating in a lot of group shows and a lot of shows. You're quite successful with it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I have several galleries right now. I'm the Red Raven in Lancaster and the Station Gallery in Greenville and Peninsula Gallery in Lewis. And then this June, I've got a show coming up in Traverse City, Michigan.
Oh.
The Higher Art Gallery. So that'll be fun. I've never been to Michigan.
Oh, I love it. Well, how are you getting these? How are you soliciting these galleries to represent you?
I think once you have a body of work, that's the most important thing. Some of the galleries have found me actually on Instagram or Facebook. Others I have applied to show with, and you get rejections. You know, no matter what, no matter who you are, you're going to get rejections. You just have to kind of persevere. But yeah, they find me or I find them. And sometimes when I reach out to them, they say, yes, we'd like to have you on board. So
that's lovely. Yeah, I was impressed. And people, I would tell you to go to Molly's website. You can see all the different exhibitions you've been in for a long time, but also just recently, you know, just in 2023. And 2022, you know?
Yeah. When my kids were little, I would do more group shows here and there. I did a couple up in New York City and stuff, but once they grew up and moved out, I found more time in the studio and could make more stuff. and that's when I started it with the galleries.
Oh, wow. Well, congratulations. Yeah, it looks great. So is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners that we haven't covered or talked about? Or?
I'm sure I'll think of a million things. But right now I'm still a little jet lagged.
I know. I'm glad we pushed it back a day because it does take it out of you, that travel. I love that you did the same thing in Colorado, that you actually stood there and projected to these people walking by. And I think if all of us just did that more.
I think so too. It's a way of just sharing your gifts with anybody and with everybody.
We're all connected. We're all human. And recognizing that in each other is just so wonderful, you know, and it's something the world needs, you know. I don't know if you listened to my recent interview with Alex Cook, but he does murals that remind people to be love for others and how it affects people. And I think that as artists, we have that ability to reach people forever, as long as that piece of work lasts, right?
So true. It's not necessarily, I mean, sales are good. Sales are good and sales help pay the bills, but it's not necessarily all about sales. It's about reaching. It's about
connecting,
spreading their word. It's our ministry, right?
Yes. Oh, I love it. But you have said so many things. I just really, I could thank you for reaching out to me because yes, this is I consider it my ministry, you know, and you're right. This is everybody, you know, as an artist, that's your ministry. Mm-hmm. And if you don't like the word ministry, if it has too many connotations, just say, this is my mission or this is my purpose.
Yeah.
You know, finding your purpose. Well, oh my gosh. Well, thanks for being on the show. Thank you for reaching out and showing your interest. And like I said, listeners, if you have read the book and you want to talk about what you do and how it relates to the book or just how it maybe even doesn't relate to the book, I'm always open. But Molly, I this has been a great conversation.
And oh, it's absolutely been my pleasure.
Thanks for reaching out to me. And thank you for listening to the Spiritual Artist Podcast. Okay, listeners, I'll talk to you soon. And there's lots to come in the new year. Lots of interviews are scheduled. So make sure you follow me on YouTube and or Spotify. We'll see you later on the Spiritual Artist Podcast. Thanks again for listening to the Spiritual Artist Podcast. Whether you're watching this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or iHeartRadio, make sure you choose the subscribe button so that you will receive updates when new segments are released. Most importantly, be still. Listen and know that you are a spiritual artist.